Hey, everybody, thanks for coming back and listening. SMQB's episode 9. This is a fun episode. You know, like everyone, we've all been sort of socially distanced and stuck away from our friends. But this week we got to be together to record our first podcast when we're all in the same room. It's a lot of fun. We're going to cover the first part of the first weekend of March Madness. We're going to talk a little bit about taunting and when it crosses the line, and our punchable face of the week. And so it's just overall, it's a good time. Thanks for listening and have some fun. Enjoy.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQB's podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from DC.
This is a big, big day for the SMQBs. At long last, we saw pictures of Carson Wentz in his Indianapolis.
Oh, come on. Come on. That's how we're starting? That's how we're starting?
It's our first live episode. We're all together for the first time ever recording one of these, not on Zoom.
Amazing. Cheers. We're all still alive. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Cheers. SMQBs. Let's hope we live through this.
Yes. Yeah. So what's everyone, what's going on? What are we here to talk about today?
There's little hoops.
Well, it is March.
Yeah.
There's a tournament going on.
There's been a lot of madness lately.
There's been a ton of madness here, that's for sure. Let's take a look back at some of our picks from last week. First and foremost, we're recording this on Saturday, so we've got the South first round in the bag and Midwest, and we're in progress in the East and West. But what was almost the most amazing pick of last week was House, who came just short of picking Oral Roberts to beat Ohio State. How did you get there?
Just a bit outside. Listen, here's the thing. Watching March Madness all these years, I feel like it's guard play. I feel like it's well-coached teams. And I do feel like it's teams who have faced a gauntlet of tough teams during the season. And when I was looking at Oral Roberts, I can't confess that I've watched Oral Roberts play any games during the season. But when I was looking at their roster, when I was looking at the games they played during the year, I thought this team is going to give Ohio State fits because they score a lot of points, because they have faced some really tough competition from the Big Five schools. And I just thought that they matched up very, very well with Ohio State. I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't go all the way and just lay it on the table.
I mean, bigger balls and you would have and you would have done it.
Yeah. So what we now know is I have small little nuts. But what a game. I mean, what a game. That kid.
Unbelievable.
That kid, Max Asemus, wow, holy mackerels. You have speed and talk about creating your own shot. That's an upset we'll remember for a long time.
Yeah. Damn good call. Damn good call.
Only the ninth time a 15 seed's beaten a two, so it's historic.
I mean, that's just what makes the tournament so much fun, too, because you're watching it and you're like, nah, this isn't going to really happen, right? And this isn't – they're going to pull it out. They'll come back, and then, you know, they don't. And that's – I mean, that's what makes the tournament so much fun.
You know, on the topic of – almost damn good calls. Milk in the Midwest told us last week that Liberty was going to test Oklahoma State, and we all laughed at him.
Yes, they did end up losing by 9, and actually Oklahoma State covered, but it was very tight. They had a 3-point lead at half. And, you know, they're same thing that Toby just said. They played. They had a strong out-of-conference schedule at the beginning of the year, and you know they were prepared.
So. I think we also might have mocked you a little bit for picking Rutgers over Clemson, although I have Rutgers in my bracket.
Yeah, Rutgers, nice win last night. I've got them actually beating Houston in the next round.
Not happening. Not happening.
Really? We'll see.
We'll see next week. Remember this on this recording right here.
8 top 25 games played, one win. All right, so Milk, now that you're feeling like Mr. Big Balls in this conversation, let's talk about your San Diego State.
Was that Aztecs or upset?
Look, right, can we just, before we do this, can we just apologize to our listener? Because anybody who, or the one listener who listened and listened, went with our picks, probably is not doing very well in their bracket.
Probably not.
And a big part of that is Milk and San Diego State.
Sorry, listeners.
I ruined my bracket. Here's
the
thing. Thank you.
Okay. The one thing that was going to hurt me in this game was if that annoying Buddy Bayham or whatever, whatever his name is.
Bayheim?
Bayheim. That'd be Jim's.
Yeah. I know who he is.
You can tell how much he knows about basketball.
Mm-hmm. I know. If the only way that Syracuse was going to win was if he went off, and he went off. 30 points. It's horrible.
That's the way he rolls.
Yeah.
Anytime a Bayheim is succeeding, I'm in a bad mood. So
I thought San Diego State would be prepared for that, and I don't know.
You must not have watched the tape in the ACC games that Bayheim was on fire.
Right. You make some sort of defensive plan around that, but clearly they didn't because they got blown out, and I've lost my grade 8 team. So, and I believe Toby was also all over San Diego State too.
I like them. I like them
too, but that's because you told me to be. I'm mad at you.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you totally screwed me, and I am holding you responsible for my shitty bracket.
Thanks a lot, Milk.
Thanks, Milk.
By the way, I did take Syracuse, but you know, beside the point.
Well.
Pope Stradamus.
Pope probably has some connection. Before we end the rest of these games, we probably should just get out on the table our loyalties, right? For the listeners, like who our loyalties are.
Yeah,
we'll have to do Pope last because he has like 12 of them.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, House,
it might be 13 by the time we get to me.
Yeah, House, what do you got?
Well, as a Villanova law student, I can't. And growing up 5 minutes from Villanova my whole life, I've lived with the Wildcats for many, many years, celebrated their championships. Villanova's my squad, and I told you guys last week that it was an in vogue pick to pick Winthrop, but Winthrop didn't play anybody all season long and believe in the Wildcats, and Villanova showed up. And now they get the mean green of North Texas. You're going to see Villanova in the Sweet 16.
I believe in Villanova.
Wow. Yeah, I've got Villanova winning again. I have them beating.
Who did you? Well, no one had. You had them beating Purdue.
I had them beating Purdue.
Wooster, what's your loyalty in the tournament? Who are you rooting for?
Well, I'm a fan of the UConn Huskies men's and women's team.
Great.
I grew up in Connecticut, and
a lot of national championships.
I think Danny Hurley has got him back. UConn's back, baby.
Milk.
Go Gators.
Da-na-na-na-na. Go.
Who will be facing Oral Roberts for a chance to go to the Sweet 16?
Sorry for your loss.
A lot better than Ohio State. I didn't go to Florida. Let's just get that on the table. Because I know
we're going to get that out of the table.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents went there. I grew up going to Florida football games. Been a Gator fan my entire life. They're my team. I'm going to turn my two sons into Gators. Their mother went to Florida State, and I told
Knowles.
I made a deal early on.
Mixed marriage.
They will be raised Gators.
Mm.
Mm. It's good that you got that out of the way.
Yeah. Way to put on the pants there, Milk. Way to be.
We've noticed that you really kind of wear the pants.
If we have a girl, she could be a Knoll.
That seems fair.
That was the deal.
That seems fair.
Right. There you go.
What about you, Bison? What do you got?
Hoya Saxa. We're in a little bit of mourning today.
Yeah.
The program, unlike most of you guys, though, I actually have a degree from Georgetown, so I can root for the team.
I don't have a degree
It is my alma mater. It was a fun run in the Big East tournament. You know, I think you got some kids playing, and there was just – they were outmatched and probably spent all their emotional energy last weekend anyway. But that's okay. It was a big step for us to get back to the tournament. So
Colorado couldn't stop making three-pointers.
Yeah, we'll probably talk about that more later. But that's my team, though, and I was just happy to see them in the tourney this year.
Well, that leaves 61 teams for Pope to cover. Here we go.
All right. So, obviously, if you've picked up, my listeners, you picked up, I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel fan, also in mourning today. Didn't expect them to go to the Final Four, but certainly expected them to get at least past first round. But we had three national championships with Roy Williams, so I'm just not that disappointed. You know, I am Carolina guy because I lived there during the Michael Jordan years. Went to Carolina games with Michael Jordan and James Worthy and Sam Perkins, and just grew up, you know, brainwashed by Carolina. I do have a team left, Alabama.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Brian Pope, listeners. Here we go.
I'd like to just say it's halftime of the game.
It is.
Only up by one.
Alabama's up by one. I agree. I will readily tell everybody, they're not going to be surprised. I was an Alabama football fan, Bear Bryant, when I was a kid. I lived there 9 years. And so I, you know, big time Alabama football fan, moved to Chapel Hill, became a North Carolina basketball fan. Yes, I know it's entirely hypocritical. And as a result of that, I do have a lot of championships, but I can take the heat. I didn't go to either school, shockingly. I went to Southern Methodist University, undergrad in law. But for the death penalty, you know, I'm sure they'd be up there too.
Well, wait a second, Pope. I want to send some congrats to you today on your big victory, because I'm pretty sure you were born in New Orleans. So congrats on LSU today.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
And also, Pope, you live in the state of Texas, so that's a big game coming up later today.
Well, I already take North Texas is only 30 miles. I mean, if we're claiming
North
the
Texas,
Texas Tech is just an hour southwest.
Guns up, Pope.
About Texas teams.
We've stayed in Colorado a little bit together recently.
Oh, yeah, so that's true. I was in Boulder for a deposition recently, so yeah.
And you ate at a Chinese restaurant that had the best egg rolls ever one time, and the guy serving you was wearing an Oral Roberts shirt. So ever since then, you've been the Oral Roberts team,
that's
too.
Right. Well, let's ask everybody if they think that's true.
Well,
but I love March Madness, guys. I mean, what a tournament in just one day. That's what we're here for, is to watch the upsets. Nothing's predictable. If you have chalk in your tournament bracket, you're already screwed.
But Pope, for real, what did happen to your Carolina Tar Heels? I mean, I'm surprised.
I picked Wisconsin to win that.
Oh, of course you did.
Yeah. So yeah, Carolina became, you know, kind of a Vegas favorite. They played better at the end of the year, but this was a really inconsistent team. It was young. The guard play was lacking. They had never had a perimeter threat. Big guys, you know, they could shoot, but they couldn't do it all themselves. I'm not going to blame COVID, but I think, you know, it's really interesting for all of the teams. If you look at it, it's a weird year. They never had a chance to gel, not just North Carolina, but a lot of other teams. I'm glad this year is almost over. I'm looking forward to going back to the Dean Dome and seeing Carolina play.
Coming up.
Carolina recruiting class, probably 3 or 4 in the country right now. It's good, and we're having everybody back.
Every year it does.
Yeah, and so, you know, next year I'm sure we'll be here talking about Kentucky and Duke all back. You know, the Blue Buds will be back. It's a weird year, but I'm still having fun, and let's see where we go with the brackets.
So we don't have much in on the West region's first round. Let's talk a little bit about the East. We got a few games in. LSU beat the Bonnies. My son's alma mater, Colorado, beat the Hoyas. And Florida State beat UNC Greensboro. Any surprises?
Michigan's going to win. They're up by like 30.
I hate to say this as a Gator fan, but keep an eye on Florida State. I think they could make a run here.
I have them in the Sweet 16.
Well, I'll say this. It's hard to imagine the Buffaloes having another lights out shooting game like that. And I can't tell whether the Colorado was that good or Georgetown was that bad today. But if there's one team that has blown me away this weekend, it was Colorado. They're athletic. They can get in deep. They can shoot from the three. They're almost perfect at the free throw line. They had like
their
six.
Defense, man. How about their defense?
Their rotation on defense was insane. And they I think they had 7 guys knocked down a three.
We've watched a lot of games up to this point in the tournament. We've had the games on nonstop since then. So we're not talking about this just because Georgetown, but I mean, wow, that was the team that impressed me the most. They don't look like a 5 seed, quite honestly. Yeah. I mean, they were slick. They were moving. They were on point. Their shooting was unbelievable. Now, very good chance when you're talking about college kids that they come out of the next game and don't hit a single three-pointer.
Yeah.
But they were impressive.
How many threes did they make in that game? I stopped counting at 16.
I
think it was like 17, over 15.
17 or 18. 17 or 18. 11 in the first half.
First half was 11 to 16.
What was your thoughts and impressions about Jabari Walker for Colorado? Did you enjoy his
time on the court? He's a freshman. He's obviously very talented.
Clearly.
I would have liked to have seen a really hard foul on him at some point in the game. Let me just put that way.
Is that how you phrased it?
Well, I might have had a little harsher words during the game. He got a flagrant one foul in the game, and he popped up, and he's got this, look, he's got a shit-eating grin on his face the whole game. He had a shit-eating grin on his face. And I just think a Patrick Ewing coach team might have found an appropriate time for a hard elbow to that grin. And I'm not saying to hurt him so that he misses.
I think you are.
We were talking about missing teeth at one point.
Yeah.
Well, that might have been okay.
Oh, that's right.
It was a heat of battle. He's a young man. I think he should tone down a little of the antics. He looks like he's going to be a talent. And, good luck to him the rest of the way. But, man, somebody's going to take a shot at him at some point, and it's going to be deserved.
Hey, before we move on, let me just give a shout-out to my son. Hey, Patrick Phelan, go Buffs.
Well, it sounds like that Buffs Florida State, based on what you're saying, Mel, because you like Florida State. It sounds like that Buffs Florida State game is going to be the game to watch in the next round.
I think it's going to be a good one.
Florida State's a good team. I got the Buffs going
and
Florida State.
And I tell you what, another good game is going to be is Wisconsin. They are the ones that impressed me the most. Obviously, they beat my Tar Heels, but they didn't just beat them. I mean, they humiliated them. They stomped them. Wisconsin lost 4 of 6 coming in to the tournament. And if that's any indication of how the Big Ten's going to be, they're going to go far. They play Baylor, and like I said, Baylor is still coming off of COVID. They still haven't gelled. I think Baylor's vulnerable. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I am going to pick Wisconsin over Baylor.
Wow.
Hey, Big 12 has not lost a game yet.
Big 12's 5-0. Absolutely.
So what's the score of the Iona Alabama?
So it's 33-32 at half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I have
Rick Pitino putting a little pressure on.
Just in case, if Iona wins.
I got a question. What does everybody think about the tournament, which we all know is fun, and we've been talking about how much we love it, but what is the feelings with the minimal fans in the stands? Have you felt it watching the games?
Definitely felt it. I think some teams would really be thriving on fans in the stands. I don't know that it's changed the game, but look, I think overall so far the NCAA has done a good job with it. I think CBS has done and all of its affiliates have done a good job with it, but it definitely feels a little off.
Right. You're never going to have a Chris Webber moment in this year's tournament.
Right.
I think we're sensitized to it now because we've been in COVID for over a year. We're used to seeing empty stands. The NBA bubble, there were no fans. There were no fans at most of the college basketball games. So I think that now it's almost like the normal, which is kind of scary.
But think about that Oral Roberts win if that stadium had been packed with 20,000 people in there. I mean, the energy in that room rooting for Oral Roberts to pull off the upset would have been bananas.
I think it's a disadvantage to the upsets, because the crowd always gets around the 12, 13 seeds if they're beating a lower seed.
Yeah.
To not have that.
But the lower seed, blue bloods typically have lots of fans there and they thrive off that as well. So, I mean, it could be neutralized. It's a shame. I hope this is the last year we do it, but I think we're just kind of normalized in watching very few fans at the NCAA tournament now.
And listen, I mean, we have to say, there wasn't a tournament last year.
That's right.
I mean, we didn't have March Madness last year. So,
fortunately,
we've lost out on so many things this year, you forget about it, but we didn't play the tournament.
I think you could argue that Georgia Tech, maybe they wouldn't have won, but they certainly were handicapped by losing Moses Wright, ACC Player of the Year, and they went out early. They were, ACC champion in the tournament. They were poised potentially to make a run, and I think they're for sure attributed to one COVID.
Well, let's go around the horn. Tell me your biggest disappointment so far.
Well, I would say that my biggest disappointment has got to be Purdue. I really thought that they were a real decent team. I definitely had them at least going into the Sweet 16. And North Texas, talk about teams that play tough teams or not during the year. North Texas doesn't play anybody. They're not in a tough conference. I found that upset shocking. And the Big Ten overall has been disappointing, but most of all, Purdue has disappointed me.
Yeah.
Milk, what do you got?
I think we all know. San Diego State. Yeah. I mean, just didn't see that coming, obviously. Had him in the grade eight.
You know, for me, my biggest disappointment so far has been Milk's picks, number one. And let's number two, Ohio State. I mean, can you believe Ohio State lost to Oral Roberts? This is crazy.
Crazy.
Knicks were a one seed for most of the year.
Unbelievable. What about you, Bryce?
Yeah, I mean, obviously my personal disappointment are the Hoyas, but beyond that, I mean, you know, look, we've said a bunch of them. I mean, Milk, for one, very disappointed in his performance, but and San Diego State, Ohio State. I got to put North Carolina up there. I mean, I know it was an 8-9 game. It wasn't, you know, they didn't come in with a lot of, you know, expectations.
Didn't show up.
Boy, they just didn't show up for the game, and that was a disappointment to me.
Achilles heel for all years. They don't start fast in the first half, and it really got them, and they just no way could turn it around, and Wisconsin was hot. But, yeah, anytime a Roy Williams North Carolina team loses in the first round, which, by the way, it's Roy's first loss ever in the first round, 29-1.
Mm. Wow.
It's disappointing. And mine is kind of, I guess, ACC related because it's Rick Barnes' team. Tennessee was one of the best teams in the SEC this year. They were peaking at tournament time. I thought a 5 seed might even been a little bit high for them. And they got smoked by Oregon State.
Yeah.
So
Oregon State was hot.
Wow. But, you know, Oregon State, they won the Pac-12 championship. And other than that, they probably wouldn't have made the tournament. I didn't see that one coming. And, you know, I would expect more of Rick Barnes. And I think that's got to be a massive disappointment in Knoxville.
You've got to be disappointed as an ACC guy, too. I mean, ACC is struggling.
ACC, I mean, if you do a quick look at the conferences, we got the Big Ten at 4-2. SEC's at 3-1. Pac-12's 2-0. USC and Drake are tied at half. ACC is 2-4. Big East 1-1. And Milk, Big 12 is?
Undefeated.
Undefeated. So, Big 12.
And I don't think Virginia's that good this year. So,
well, and they got COVID this year.
I got them losing to Ohio.
Yeah, I have them losing to Ohio, too. I think we were on the record last week as saying that. But I think Ohio wins that game.
I think Virginia's
so we already talked about this. I think the consensus is that we're most impressed with Colorado. Does anyone else have a team they're most impressed by so far?
I think, yeah, I mean, Wisconsin to me, but I can give it to Colorado because I didn't expect that. So,
yeah.
I mean, although, the surprise has to be Oral Roberts, right?
Right.
I think that, listen, sorry, Milk, but I really think that's going to be this year's Cinderella. I think Oral Roberts is also going to beat Florida. Florida should not.
I'm shocked you're picking against
them. Well, listen, they should not have won that game. Virginia Tech choked that game away. I think we all know that. There were some badly
very questionable plays.
You missed two free throws to even allow that three-pointer at the end.
Well, in the end, I think Oral Roberts will be dancing with Cinderella's shoes.
I don't necessarily disagree. I could see Oral Roberts beating Florida. We're not that good this year.
Bryson, let's follow up on this issue you had with Jabari Walker and move on to our segment on taunting versus celebrating and where do you draw the line?
Well, you know, this is a tough one because, you know, we want sports to be fun and there's energy and, you know, electricity in sports and it's supposed to be full of passion. But, you know, to me, this is like, you know, it's like the Supreme Court said about pornography. You know it when you see it. Like, there's celebrating and they're celebrating with your team. And then there's just crossing a line where, you know, you're just kind of a dick at some point. And, you know, we talked about Parker from Colorado and, you know, he just sort of had, like I said, that smirk on his face. But you see this a lot. And I think, House, you were the victim of this week.
Yeah, I mean, this week, the Sixers had a tough matchup against the Bucks going back to back after a night after the Knicks. It's always tough to play back to back in the NBA. They were jacked up to play the Bucks without Embiid. It was a great game. The Sixers were leading for a long time, and then Giannis put the Bucks on his back and mounted a comeback. The Sixers made an unbelievable three to tie it up at the end of the game, and it went into overtime. And in overtime, Giannis made an improbable shot. And after making the shot, a timeout was called. He ran back across the court. He sat down with a big shit-eating grin on his face, folded his arms to taunt the away fans, which are now attending games at the Sixers. Now, maybe I'm biased about it, but I was pissed off. And Dwight Howard, basically in the post-game press conference, was like, he wanted to throttle him. He wanted to just destroy, he wanted Stone Cold Steve Austin, well, Giannis. And I don't know how you guys feel about that. I don't know how you guys feel about what Giannis did. Is that just having fun? He said, I was just having fun. Or do you think that's taunting? Do you think that crosses the line?
I don't know. I mean, when I saw that, I compared that in my mind to when T.O. came to the Dallas Star after a touchdown when he was with the Niners before he was a Cowboy and celebrated on the Star. And that was considered sacrosanct, and he got leveled by George Teague.
That's right.
You know, when you taunt on an opposing team's court sometimes, or football field sometimes, it's one too far.
Right. I kind of see Giannis as being like Juju Smith-Schuster this past year. Improper. Don't go out there and dance on the other team's logo. But they're both nice guys, and so maybe they get a pass this one time. But they shouldn't do that. They just should not do it.
Juju was such an idiot because he was doing it before the game even started.
And then finally
go out and have like two catches.
Right, because then they get a target out of it.
Taunt after you've gone off for 200 yards.
I didn't like what Giannis did. I thought it was silly, immature, and just unprofessional. And it wasn't fun. It wasn't celebratory.
The thing that drives me crazy, and look, I come down on the old school side. Like, you know, you score a touchdown, hand the football to the official, and walk away. But it was, you know, it's my team, the team currently known as the Washington Football Team, that kind of started a lot of this with the group stuff, with the fun bunch after the touchdowns. And that was one of the first, like, choreographed group things. I think these choreographed things are so over the top. I mean, there's some creativity to them, and I get it. And look, at the end of the day, these are young men or women, and if you're talking women's sports, that are having fun and trying to have a good time with it. But some of the choreography on it, it's just too thought out. It's too planned. It's just it makes me want to.
How about this one? How about if a Vikings player playing against Green Bay in Green Bay scores a touchdown and then jumps up to do a Lambeau leap into the end zone?
Assume the risk.
Yeah.
I mean, they're having fun. I really wonder where the line is drawn. I mean, Milk, in the Super Bowl, right? There was a game earlier in the season when Kansas City beat the Bucks, and Tyreek Hill scored on a long pass, and
about 12 long passes.
That's true. Yeah, right. And he threw up the deuces to say
second touchdown
for this
for our safety Winfield.
Right, and then in the Super Bowl, Winfield got some payback.
Absolutely, that's the point though. It's like, why you're adding added motivation to the defense, because he clearly remembered that and was like, I'm going to go out there today and make sure he pays for that. And he played his ass off, and it comes back, it bites you in the ass inevitably. Yeah. Tyreek Hill was awful in the Super Bowl.
See, I think the line is, to me, this is a perfect example. The line is the difference between a joyous celebration, which I think is okay. Like, I remember way back when to White Shoes Johnson, after he would score a touchdown on a kick return, and he would do that ridiculous dance. I mean, that was funny. It was fun. It was, as a kid, it was fun to watch that.
Checking in with the older demographic.
Yeah. But on the other hand, when Tyreek Hill scored that touchdown and, like, the guy fell down, or he was just beaten so badly that Tyreek Hill was able to walk backwards up to the 1 yard line and then just stand there and, like, taunt the whole team
before
doing the backflip into the end zone. But, I mean, he should have been punched.
Right? I have a certain amount of respect for anybody who can do a backflip.
Right. I agree. But there's a total difference with, like,
that is when you're actually taunting the other team. But if there's a celebration after a team scores a touchdown. And
do your backflip as a celebration. Well, that's fine, but don't taunt. Don't taunt.
Okay, but moving from a backflip to a bat flip.
Yeah, let's ask
what do you think about that?
Wow. Yeah, let's ask the baseball player at the table. So, so our listeners should know that Chris Nace was a collegiate baseball player. And you've had your share of baseball games, right? So I think you bring a little expertise to the table. When you're, you know, when the Expos, I can't call them the Nationals, when the Expos, when the Expos are playing the Phillies and, you know, one of the Phillies jacks one out and does a bat flip, what's your take on it?
Well, so, okay, so just for the record, too, I think I had more surgeries in college than plate appearances. So,
that's okay.
I still was around a lot of games, believe it at that. You know, I think the bat flip is a perfect example of knowing it when you see it, right? There is a bat flip that is appropriate and is exciting.
Yep.
And then there's a bat flip that's a bat flip up your ass, like, you know, suck it, other team, right? I mean, there. I'll bring it back up. I seem to bring this up, this guy up every podcast now. Bryce Harper. Harper's first game back in D.C., he was, I mean, booed mercilessly. And then he hit a ball about 800 feet. And his bat flip on that was fairly, you know, in your face. And it was in your face to the fans, not really. And I think it was also like just pure emotion by him, too. That one was sort of over the top to me, but you understood it. There are guys who do the bat flips and they do it in a way that it's fun and they keep it towards their team. And then there's other ones you see and you're like, yeah, the next guy up's about to get one under his chin.
What about Joey Bats?
He's the worst.
Well, he's the worst.
He's the worst defender.
He's the worst defender.
What does he do?
And you know what? His own teammates don't like it because they're the ones who suffer.
They're the ones you're going to get the high hard one the next time.
He should be the one getting one in the ear.
Well, that's the one. That's a piece that I think I disagree with all you guys about, because I think you guys have been on record in our prior conversation saying that if you're going to do the bat flip, then either the next time that guy's up or somebody else on the team should expect a high hard one inside at the head, whatever. I don't think so. First of all, I think the bat flip is okay. I like what Fernando Tatis does. I love his young energy with all of that. And guess what? If you threw a bad pitch, suck it. You know, why take the next player and threaten to injure him by throwing a high hard one? I got a problem with that.
So you'd be okay with the pitcher after each strikeout doing a little Tiger Woods?
Some of them do. Some of them do. Some of them do. Especially the relievers, you know, the setup guy in the eighth inning after he strikes out the side, he's pumping the fist. Like, some of them do.
Sure. But there's two types of bat flips.
Right.
There's obnoxious bat flip, and there's like, it's kind of, hey, I'm happy, I'm flipping it, whatever. But then, you know it when you see it.
Right.
You know,
right.
You see it right. Slow. Right. Right. The guy's walking to first.
It's staring at the pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, so Big Poppy, I think, is a perfect example of a fun bat flip. Big Poppy would do a bat flip and no one would be pissed off.
Yeah.
Every time Joey Bats does a bat flip, the whole other team is mad. And I think some of his own teammates are mad because they know they're about to get one in the ribs.
Well, that also brings up the next question, too. And Toby, you make a good point. I mean, look, baseball in particular needs to find a way to harness the energy, the fun. You know, Harper used to wear the hat that said, make baseball fun again. And that's true. And these celebrations and things do bring energy to the game, particularly for the home crowd. But you could, you know, what about the unwritten rules then? You know, there's what's wrong with, okay, you know, I think in baseball, at least, it comes down to, are you showing up the other team? Are you showing up the pitcher? It's the same thing when a guy walks slowly around the bases or admires the ball as it goes out of the park, you know, for a little too long. And that's when you see, you know, the pitcher take it and put the next one in the guy's ribs or something. And agree with you, nobody wants to see anyone get hurt. Headhunting isn't okay. You know, pitchers know that if they're going to throw at someone, you just put it in their shoulder and their back, right? I mean, where, yeah, it's gonna hurt. It's going to leave a mark. But you hit someone in the back with a baseball, it's not going to end their career. They're not going to probably miss time from that. So there are these, you know, unwritten rules. I mean, to your point about your center, what's his name? Dwight Howard. I would have liked to have seen Dwight Howard go tackle that guy.
Right.
I mean, you know, that can build camaraderie and energy for your own team when someone stands up to that. Like when T.O. did it in Dallas, and who did you say went over and
George Teague.
Yeah, I mean, good for Teague, right? I mean, that's what he should have done, you know, protect the
not on our star.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, well, how about the time this past year when Joe Kelly threw at someone? Joe Kelly, a pitcher for the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah.
He with the Red Sox, he threw at someone and then pouted from the mound at him like, it's awesome. That was great.
It's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there is a line. There is a line that gets crossed when it's a taunting in a way that's intended to take it beyond the pale. And I think, you know, it can get into some dangerous situations in sports where players really are going to get hurt for payback.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I want to amend my statement. I don't think you should be throwing at a guy's head. I don't think by saying I'll get one in the ear, that's wrong. I think you throw at the ribs and the back, and that's where you leave it.
Yeah. So just want to update our listeners. Even this is going to be history. This is going to be history. But for us right now, we've got a seesaw battle back and forth. Creighton is holding 63-62 with 15 seconds to go. UCSB will have the ball and we'll give you the final, even though you already know it. But this is what we're living right now. We are living large.
How am I Gales doing?
I think we all by one.
Did we all pick Santa Barbara?
The Gales are winning by one.
We didn't all pick Santa
Barbara. I picked Santa Barbara.
They're down by one.
Oh, I picked Santa Barbara too.
I picked Santa Barbara to Craig Kelly.
Well, Craig, at least you know one person here was loyal to you. So, you know, you find out a lot about your friends during these tournament games and who's loyal to you, who picks with you. Well, and some people smile with you and say, oh, yeah, I think you're going to win that game too. And then you find out later they didn't pick you in a single one of their 22 brackets they submitted.
Sorry, Shaq.
There's a lot of turncoats here, a lot of turncoats.
My favorite part of the last day has been Rooster saying that, encouraging all these teams, UNC, Georgetown, and then secretly showing me his bracket and the other team.
A real Benedict Arnold.
Georgetown's got this, man.
Oh, yeah, Nace, you got
Colorado.
This. Yeah, you got this, Nace.
That's right.
Well, I'm just trying to be nice to my friends while I pick with my head.
Right.
Uh-huh. It appears that Creighton won. When that USCB missed a layup at the buzzer.
Whoa.
Suck it, losers.
Shout out to Craig Kelly. Wanted the shout out. Here you go, buddy.
Craig Kelly.
Craig Kelly and the Creighton Blue Jays. Don't worry. A Blue Jay is still not going to be part of my background yet, Craigie.
All right. Anything else on taunting?
No, it's
good. By the way, I think the last thing you'd say about taunting, too, by the way, is your perspective changes drastically if it's your team.
Exactly.
In that case, it's just good, clean, fun celebration. Right. If it's the other team, somebody needs to take out those MFers right away. Right?
By the way, there was a fair amount of taunting here at this table last night, as I recall.
Oh, there was some taunting last night.
Yeah.
It was rough.
NCAA men's basketball March Madness plus liquor equals a lot of taunting.
It was unclear if there was going to be an episode 9 of the SMQ after last night.
We won't get into last night.
Good thing nobody had our gambling picks.
It's a good thing there's no audio or video of last night.
Yeah, no video at all. All right, well, I guess it's...
It's that time.
It is. It's time for Punchable Face of the Week.
It's this week's Punchable Face.
And we have someone who probably deserves more than a punch in the face this week. And it's, you know, it's not funny, and so I don't want to make light of this. But yesterday, I mean, we've obviously talked about the Oral Roberts upset of Ohio State. And a young man on the Ohio State team, E.J. Liddell or Little, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but I think it's Liddell, who had a heck of a game, by the way. I think he had 24 points, like 13 rebounds, 5 assists, had a big game. He had a chance in regulation to hit. He had a 1-1. He missed the front end. It would have made it a 3-point game if he made the first one, obviously 4-point game if he made them both. And he missed the front end, and eventually the game goes into overtime. And at that point, you know, we know what happens in overtime with Oral Roberts winning. So today, we wake up and we have news that he got some just really horrific, terrible messages sent to him. I'm unclear if they were texted to him or if they were on you know, some social media platform, but death threats, all sorts of racist taunts and racist language that we won't even say here, and just really over the top, terrible things. You know, don't come back to Ohio State. Everybody here hates you. That sort of stuff. And I think what was, to me personally,
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, death threats. Right. Yeah, flat out death threats. Yeah. And I think what was, to me, what was really the most heartbreaking to read about it was his, you know, he posted them, he shared them on his Instagram feed, and he just commented, he said, "What did I do to deserve this? You know, I'm just a human." And I just think this stuff is like, you know, it's so over the top. I mean, these are young men and women playing these games. We can have a whole nother conversation about the exploitation of these athletes by the NCAA and what they, you know, the amount of money involved that they don't really partake in. But at the end of the day, these are 19, 20, 21 year old kids playing a game. Yeah, they're playing at a high level and there's a lot of money at stake. And watching this kid play, he looks like he has a future playing professionally, and I hope he does. But if you are going on somebody's feed, and first of all, if you're sending a death threat, you get more than a punch in the face right away. But to go on a feed because of a basketball game and taunt and abuse, and I mean, this is abuse. This is abuse. And I guarantee you one thing about whoever it was, and Ohio State reported this to the police, and hopefully they'll find the person.
Was it one person or multiple?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it was multiple reports at this point. I think the death threats were one.
He posted multiple accounts.
Yeah, I think so. And hopefully they find the people. But I guarantee you that the people who did this probably have dicks that resemble a golf pencil. Probably, you know, lack the coordination.
That's my best golf club, by the way.
You know, lack the coordination to tie their shoes in the morning. Certainly wouldn't be there hitting a free throw in an NCAA college basketball tournament game with everything on the line like that.
And wouldn't dare say it to this guy's face.
And certainly wouldn't say it to this guy's face. I mean, these are, you know, probably physically, but certainly mentally and emotionally, these are small, small, small people to do this. I mean, just get a fucking life.
Get a life.
Get a life.
Get a life.
Yeah. If that's what you decide to do, so anybody, and not just people going after this kid, but anybody out there, if you ever feel the need when an athlete screws something up for your team, if you ever feel the need to go at them on social media, then guess what? You're the punchable face of the week this week. Just back off, enjoy sports for what it is, and don't be a fucking asshole.
Here,
people.
Here.
He was their leading scorer in the game. He had 14 rebounds, 23 points. And they're going after this guy?
And he's not the one. He's not the one who took
the top scorer.
The ill-advised final shot in regulation.
It was
and stepped back. It was Washington and didn't make it. And he's not the one who missed a wide open three at the end of the overtime. He's not the one.
And no matter what, nobody deserves it. Not Dwayne Washington, nobody. And the thing is, I guarantee you at the heart of all of these messages is a gambling loss. I guarantee you that. And that's what's really sad about it is these people with the sickness that they're spending money on a stupid entertainment college sports game are now going to take out their hate over losing a bet on this kid, like you said. Well said, Bison. Well said.
Too. You know what? That kid, you don't think he's going to lose sleep over missing that shot for a long time anyway?
Exactly.
He needs some schmuck coming out and taunting him and giving him death threats like that. I mean, this is a competitor. The amount of time and energy and hours he spends working at that, and you know, he knows he missed that free throw. And we look, everybody knows that there's so many points in a game that could change the outcome of it. To put it on one free throw is over the top. It's stupid. But I guarantee you he's going to think about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, for this kid, if he ever hears this, I hope he knows, you know, he played a hell of a game. He's a hell of a competitor. And go back and, you know, hold your head up high. You're going to be one heck of a player.
We got your back, EJ.
And yeah, we got your back here, buddy.
Well said.
Punch both of those guys or anyone right in the smacker.
Well, it's going to be a fun week. I'll really look forward to being back with you guys on the next podcast to see how our continued picks go. And I think we're going to have a lot to talk about next week on some developments in the NFL, too.
I just want to remind you guys, too, you know, we talked a little bit about our antics last night, and we all made a pledge to each other. I don't know if all of you remember it.
We did.
But after episode 50, we're going to get the SMQB's tattoo.
Yeah. Wow. Might not mention that to my wife, but otherwise, we're good.
It was episode 100.
Not sure what you mean by
50, okay.
I'm not sure what you mean by
I don't recall that moment.
I'm hoping that by that point I've got a bicep to put it on.
By the way, Iona is giving Alabama everything they can handle.
Yeah, let's get to it.
We need a speed round to wrap it up here today.
Are there any scores we need to be mindful of as we take it out here?
Well, I have a little speed round item. Breaking news, the Giants just upended the balance of power in the NFC East by signing Kenny Galladay for 4 years.
I'd like to congratulate Kenny Galladay
for fleecing
the Giants for $72 million.
It's a lot of money.
How he did it.
$40 million guaranteed.
But congratulations, Galladay.
Yeah,
that makes the $34 million contract Curtis Samuel got from Washington look pretty good. I feel like we won that battle.
I'm not sure if Galladay played last season.
Prior to that, the Giants signed John Ross and then said, oh, we still need a wide receiver.
Now, the NFC least got better this week. The Cowboys signed Dak, the Foreskins or whatever you want to call them, the TFs. They really fortified their team. Fitzmagic can probably work with them, but Curtis Samuel's a big time signing there. And Galladay is no joke, and I think it changes the fortunes of their draft. They're no longer taking a receiver at 12,
11,
and now they're going to get some defensive help. And so I'm looking forward to the Eagles getting the number one overall pick next year.
Yeah, I think the Giants may take Surtain or definitely an edge rusher.
Well, Surtain won't be there, assuming the Cowboys are still picking ahead of you.
People are saying that the Cowboys are going to go offensive line now, right?
They need to shore up their defense. That's where they should be focused. Jerry, if you're listening, Steven, defense.
I don't ask for much, but I am praying that the Eagles take a quarterback.
Yes.
Please take a quarterback.
I cannot explain why both.
We are going to have an emergency podcast for that if it happens on the draft day.
Yes. They sent both their offensive coordinator and their quarterback coach to the pro day for Trey Lance, who happens to go the same college as Carson Wentz. Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea.
Going well. This sounds good.
Yes.
Good week. Right, it was a good week. Right. Great time here.
Great seeing everybody.
Hopefully everybody else is getting back to, you know, getting close to going back to normal and getting together because this is fun.
Next time we're together, we'll have a Final Four.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be fun. Will it be chalk or will it be the Cinderella?
We'll see. We'll know soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
All right,
see ya.
Great time.
Yeah. See ya.